Hello and welcome to Reporting In. I'm your host, Malcolm Fleschner. Reporting In, as you're probably already aware, is the TYT Network show dedicated to the topic of investigative journalism, to reporting, to the news media specifically. And today on the show, I'm beside myself with excitement because our guest is universally beloved political satirist, a dissident, and host of Redacted Tonight on RT, Lee Camp. Lee, are you there?
I'm here. Wonderful. I know some of the New York Times that might disagree with universally beloved.
Yeah, that's right. You were even written up in the New York Times, which I would suggest people go back and find that story, and it will explain perhaps better than even we can why we need a show like Redacted Tonight.
Luckily, my response to their attack piece went viral, so some people got the real story.
it was awesome. I mean, your response was awesome. I do recommend people don't not now. When the show's over, go check out the New York Times piece.
Do not.
I think it was like in January of 2017. It was a while ago, but they were. Well, you once went on Fox News and referred to the whole network as a festival of ignorance, and I think that would apply to that story in the New York Times as well.
Moment, definitely. Yeah, they had to make two retractions in that single one-page story ultimately. So apparently, they can't even write about a comedian without getting it wrong.
Yeah. So anyway, but I want to also mention that if you're not familiar, Lee does his show Redacted Tonight. It's on the RT network at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Friday nights. It's also available on YouTube and on Twitter. And you know, I admitted to him before the show that I watch it on Twitter, which I don't know why, but I feel ashamed to admit that. But the main reason you're here today and you're putting up with me is you're plugging your new comedy special, which is I the title was too long for me to memorize, so I have to read it. Super patriotic, very Uncle Sam comedy special not allowed on American TV! ! And we're going to talk about that later, but just let you know, you can go to leecampcomedyspecial.com to check that out. Before or after, no, not before you watch this, but after you watch this and after you read the New York Times article and Lee's response. You got a busy day ahead of you is all I'm saying.
We filled up their whole dance card with just this opening, just this intro.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I'm going to let you talk because I know you're just going to give me a hard time. So, all right, but let's move forward. So today we're doing this. It's less than 24 hours after, well, the majority of the midterm election results have rolled in, and this was the commemorative 15th most important midterm election of our lifetime.
Yes.
So it's always fun to have that to look back on and reflect on. But as a member of the news media, as members of the news media, I am contractually obligated to ask you for your hottest of hot takes on the results from last night. So go ahead, lay them on me.
All right. Do you want the good news or the bad news first?
You know, it's just hot. It has to be hot.
It just has to be hot.
And it also has to be balanced. It has to be fair and balanced. You know, neutral.
I have never agreed to be fair and balanced. I'll give you the good news. The good news is, first of all, Kris Kobach and Scott Walker went down with. Oh, that is so nice. I just like to sit and rub that on my body for a while because, you know, you got Scott Walker, who's been sucking on Koch brothers for years. And then you got Kris Kobach, who is the king of election fraud. This is the guy who invented interstate crosscheck. And the fact that even he wasn't able to rig his own election, that's very exciting. Very exciting right there.
Yeah, he's like he's both the king of election fraud, but also apparently not very good at it.
Not that good at it, and also not good at finding people to prosecute as if there had been election fraud. Because I made fun of one interview he did with Fox News where they go, so how many people have you found? And he goes, well, we have prosecuted two people for this. Like, there's no one goes from state to state and it pretends to be another person with a fake mustache. It just doesn't happen. Anyway. That aside, the fact that he lost the governor race is very exciting. And yes, I like that the Democrats won the House because it will create gridlock. And I think anytime our government is not doing something, it's usually wonderful for the people when they just stop doing the awful stuff that they're constantly trying to do. That's usually good for the people.
You know, that's the funny thing is that's the kind of thing that a right winger could say and would say.
Yeah. About what?
About government. Like, you know, the government that governs least, that governs best, that sort of thing. I mean, but I think what you're actually saying is gridlock is good in this case because it won't allow the Republicans to keep the government from doing those few things that it does properly and well, like cut Social Security and cut Medicare and cut Medicaid and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's
right. Well, and I would say that the Republican that says that about governing least doesn't understand what they're talking about.
That's true.
Whereas, you know, and this may be where you and I differ, I think the Democrats don't actually do that much for the people. And I've challenged people to tell me times recently that our Congress has done something the people of America wanted that did not align with corporate interests. And I almost can't, no one can seem to come up with one. You know, some point to Obamacare, but Obamacare ultimately aligned with insurance company interests. So it doesn't, you can't, we're talking decades since they did anything for the people that was against corporate interests.
Yeah, but there was a Princeton study recently that basically came out and said, yeah, whatever the corporations want, that's what our government does. And so the public input or public interest in whatever these policies are is really immaterial.
Yeah. That study looked at 1,770 some policy issues and found that the people can get what they want if it aligns with corporate interests.
Right.
And that's just about the only time. So I think the hot take, the big thing that is unspeakable, honestly, on your corporate airwaves is that what we're debating over is really a small window of difference. I mean, These both sides of our system agree on the largest issues of militarism, of Wall Street going unchecked, of prison industrial complex, of almost doing nothing about climate change. I'm not talking about what they say. I'm talking about what their actions are. They agree on all those issues. So what we debate about and fight tooth and nail about for these little county here and this little county there and it is really a small bit of the actions we could be taking in this country or the things we could be getting done or the lives we could be changing. And so it's not that I don't, you know, want to see, you know, the House stop Trump's horrible agenda, but I just think that what we're debating over is very small. And the second thing is, if you noticed, the Democratic Party succeeded in weeding out all progressives that had a shot of winning in the primaries.
Well, they tried to anyway. There are a couple squeaked through that when they weren't looking.
And by a couple, you mean exactly two.
Well, that's what a couple is.
Yeah, exactly. There were two like kind of Bernie-crat people that squeaked through. But other than that, because I think there were something like 30 Bernie-crats or anti-corporate candidates that ultimately were in the general, but almost all of them were in areas that the Democratic Party knew we couldn't win,
right,
we being Democrats. And so they allowed them to go through, so they didn't get into Congress. They're just allowed to get to the primaries. But and the DCCC has done this on, you know, every level. They both make sure the corporate candidate has the funding. They make sure the corporate candidate has the data. They keep the data away from the anti-corporate candidate, and they weeded out all of the progressives early on.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. Thank you for your those notes of optimism, Lee. Appreciate it. Well, I also note that
I am here to only give people hope through laughter, not hope through facts that aren't real or I don't know, false hope. I don't give false hope. I just give laughter.
I didn't come on bring you on for false hope. That's for sure. But false hope is, I think, what a lot of people will have going into this. Maybe, you know, Florida didn't go as people had hoped, and Georgia, the governor's race, and so on and so forth. But hey, we took the House back, and now we're really going to not just gridlock, but we're what I think people can expect, and what they reasonably will get is a lot of congressional hearings, a lot of House, you know, hearings. Yeah. And the reason why I think they will get that is that that's the kind of thing that the Democratic leadership can get behind. Going after Trump, being anti-Trump is okay because that doesn't actually upset their corporate donors. But as we saw with this campaign, being as a Democrats, being behind Medicare for all or increasing the minimum wage and, you know, free college tuition, all this sort of thing, you know, cutting student debt, those are all unpopular policies with corporate America, but very popular policies with the people. So they couldn't run on that, and they're not going to push that, but they will. They're going to give us this candy of hauling Trump cabinet members in front of the House committees to grill them. I think that what they should do is start getting Trump cabinet members, calling them in front of a committee to find out what their involvement in Benghazi was. Because how could they object to that? I mean, we're finally get to the bottom. What was Steve Mnuchin doing about Benghazi? He had almost as much to do with it as anybody else the Republicans used to. But anyway.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, they should hold him in front of that. No, I can enjoy watching a horribly corrupt, awful politician dragged in front of a hearing to hear how awful they are. I'll high five with the rest of you.
That's like popcorn. Sure, yes, it's fun to watch, but it doesn't do anything.
I just don't know that solves climate change and the fact that 50% of America can't afford a $1,000 emergency. I just don't know that does that.
Right, exactly. And so, but it doesn't rock the boat, which is why they'll do it. But even this morning, Nancy Pelosi, or last night at her, I guess at her victory party, the first thing she started talking about was bipartisanship and reaching across the aisle to find consensus and compromise with the Republicans. And I'm like, can you even imagine Republicans doing that? But really, what does that mean? Like, I know that sounds good, but does that mean like when these refugees are approaching our border, we're still going to attack them, but only with rubber bullets? Like, what is compromising with the Republicans who are out to destroy? It's infuriating that the first step.
And I think it's infuriating if you believe that these people's interests are polar opposite, which mine and Trump's are. But when you see like these corporate politicians and you watch them hang out at their, you know, gatherings, and you see these photos of Michelle Obama hugging George W. Bush, that doesn't align with what we believe George W. Bush did. We believe that he, you know, helped murder a million Iraqis and lied, and you know, he and his administration lied to us into war. And so you shouldn't want to hug that person, but that's not what these ruling elite really are, in my opinion. They aren't that different on most of the core issues. And so I'm not saying don't vote for the one that believes gay people should be able to get married. You should want that. But it's just don't act like these people are polar opposites, because they're not. And you're exactly right. Furthermore, the Democrats, even before the election, because they figured they'd probably get the House, started tamping down the expectations that they do anything about climate change. They started saying like, oh, well, you know, don't expect much. We've got 11 and a half years till the point of no return, and don't expect much.
Well, Nancy Pelosi was also talking about we're going to reinstitute PAYGO. So which is like saying anything that costs money, we're not going to do. You know, anything that's going to actually help people, use government policy to help people. That was even if they took the Senate, she was saying that we're going to reinstitute PAYGO, which meanwhile, we're going to do something about the deficit while the Republicans are running it up sky high with the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires and corporations. And Nancy Pelosi is saying, you know what, we haven't won yet, but hang on a second, I just got to chop off my foot here. And then for after the election to say, okay, remember how I told you not to have your hopes to get your hopes up? Well, now we need to even dial them down further. So, and I know what you're saying. Yes, she doesn't. Her interests are aligned with the Republicans on almost all these issues. But does she have to come out and admit it and just say, "Look, I know you guys were working so hard to get out the vote for this blue wave, and now, thanks. We'll take it from here, and don't expect very much." It's just like such horrible politics. It's frustrating.
Well, it's bad politics, and it shows how they don't really represent the American people. I mean, I think in a lot of ways you're seeing the last gasp of a dying two-party system. They don't represent people. All they have are lies. I mean, that's all Trump has, but that's also a lot of all the Democrats have. Are these lies to throw out to people, and like candy? But once people realize the candy's just sawdust, it's like, how long can you sustain that? The next financial crisis is around the corner, and you know, struggling people aren't going to just be able to eat lies for dinner.
And you know that when it happens, Donald Trump is going to blame the Democrats' House majority, and they're going to be blindsided by it. No, it wasn't us. What are you talking about? But the Democrats, some would argue the Democrats are paid to lose, not that they are actually paid and literally they go say, I want to lose. But that they don't have as much interest in winning as, or they would rather lose and retain power than win, and the individuals who control the Democratic Party have to give up some of that power to progressives and people on the left who really want to change things and institute these policies that are going to prevent people from, you know, 80% of Americans living from paycheck to paycheck and can't afford a $1,000 emergency and so on and so forth. So,
well, and it seems, as they proved with the primaries between Hillary and Bernie, they'd rather lose to someone who's not going to rock the Wall Street boat, the corporate boat, then win, quote unquote, with somebody who would have probably rocked Wall Street a little bit and said we need to increase the social safety net in a lot of levels.
And also would have cleaned house in the Democratic Party, which is probably what they were even more afraid of.
Yeah.
There's a lot to get, but I want to talk about your comedy special also because some people may not be familiar with the brand of political satire you do. I actually looked you up on Wikipedia, and under genres, it lists black comedy, political satire, and observational comedy. And under subjects, it just says society, which I find amusing. It's like, yeah, that you focus on society mostly. That's, yeah, you know, as opposed to that. I mean, that's like everything, just everything. Well,
see, he focuses on the things around him and the world and
yeah,
stuff.
Like other dimensions or, other universes. He keep that to a relative minimum. So, okay, so why this special now, and why is it called Super Patriotic Very Uncle Sam Comedy Special Not Allowed on American TV?
Well, the reason is now, it's been 4.5 years since my last stand-up special. I wanted to, put together the material and tape a good evening of comedy for people to see what I've been doing for 20 years. Because, you know, they're used to me from Redacted Tonight, but a lot of them have not seen my stand-up comedy, which very similar topics, similar conversations, but stand-up obviously has a different feel to it. And, you know, being in a 500-seat theater has a whole different feeling as well. So, that's a lot of the why. In terms of the title, the title speaks to a lot of what I cover in the special, which, I mean, I don't spend that much time on myself in the special. I spend it mostly talking about, the issues you and I have already hit on and our endless war and, election rigging and all of these things. But I do talk at the beginning about the fact that, and you mentioned this a little at the beginning too, that I am now called some sort of foreign agent or something, or I get, accused on the interwebs of being a propagandist. And meanwhile, and as I say at the beginning of every Redacted, I'm an American in America covering American news, and that somehow makes me a foreign agent. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, as you like to make fun of me for. I'm actually named after Robert E. Lee. I'm also descended from Walter Camp, who invented American football. All right. So I am more American than a bald eagle wearing a strap on, bending over Uncle Sam. I am very American, but that, the ideas I talk about, the stuff I talk about, being left of center makes you a very scary threat in our society, in our culture, and questioning some of the ideas of capitalism that have allowed us to eat our entire environment, and now we're watching it collapse around us. As the oceans acidify and fill with plastic, and we're 11 years from what the IPCC says the point of no return is. As we see that around us, God forbid I should talk about economics and question how we have things set up here. So that's really part of what that title is addressing.
And it's also, I only saw snippets on the website I went to, which was veryunclesam.com, although you're sending people to leecampcomedyspecial.com. You also talk about, it's not just like politics and issues, it's also about society, as pointed out on Wikipedia, but like the bit you do about engagement rings, and a man buying a woman this rock, and she has to take it from him, and it has to be shiny enough for her, like you're a bird doing a bower dance, and she has to be impressed with your plumage. But you have insight into a cultural insight that have larger meaning And so it's funny, but it's also thoughtful. And so I would. It's not just for hardcore people who want to hear like political comedy. It's also there's also a broader more thoughtful perspective on things. But it's still very funny. So that's what I wouldn't want to scare anybody away who's you know not a politics junkie.
No, that's absolutely true. And that's why I think comedy is valuable right now is like, people will, I think, enjoy this special most anywhere they are on the political spectrum. Now, obviously, some people could take issue with one part and turn it off. But I think in general, if people are laughing, they're not, worried about just getting furious that they disagree with a point or something. And so, the special, as you're saying, covers a lot of different things in a lot of different areas. You know, I talk about meat production, and I talk about the fact that most dryer sheets have animal fat on them, which, you know, if you eat meat, maybe you don't care. But if you're a vegetarian, you're like, oh, my God, what am I soaked in right now? And, you know, it's just a lot of little things in our society where we're kind of being lied to or misled or we don't understand what's really going on. And so I talk a lot about that. And, you know, that is not a political viewpoint. That's just it's just a statement of like, let's reexamine our world and really understand, you know, what it is we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it. And I definitely get all over the map. It is not. And as I say at the beginning of the hour, the comedy special, I mentioned Trump, I think, twice. I tear him apart for about 2 minutes, and I'm like, well, okay, I'm glad we got that out of the way. But Trump is a symptom of a much deeper problem. He didn't cause racism. He didn't cause climate change. He didn't cause a lot of these things. He's just a glaring example of it. And I then move on and say, you know, basically, you're not really going to hear me mention Trump for the next 58 minutes. And that's why, because he is a symptom of things that have been long existing. And the comedy special is not just, let's talk about Nancy Pelosi or Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton for an hour.
I'm pretty sure America and the whole globe was a utopia until January 20th, 2016. But I guess we'll have to agree to disagree, as they like to say on other political talk shows. We're almost out of time. Before we go, I wanted to talk about the New York Times article that you referred to and being describing you as a propagandist. Often, it's the allegation is that because you work for RT, which is funded by Russia, that you are doing Russian propaganda. And you know, if you want to make that argument, I'm willing to enter, not you personally, but if someone wants to make that argument, I'm willing to entertain it, as long as those people will also make the argument that whoever funds whatever media outlet is delivering the news is delivering propaganda for whoever owns that station. But they never make that extrapolation to American news and the American news media and the corporate news media. So, but I wanted to talk a little bit before we go about the related issue, which is Russiagate, which has dominated the left-wing media, news media, for basically the past almost 2 years. And yet, in the run-up to this election, it dropped off. I mean, there was one study showed that of Democratic congressional candidates, it was mentioned in 0.1% of commercials, and in the Senate, it was zero over a one-month period. And if Russia is this, you know, and all this talk, you know, Chuck Todd on MSNBC when they didn't know who was sending these mail bombs to George Soros, he suggested it was probably Russia. He's like, I suspect it's, yeah. And I'm like, what are you talking about, you lunatic? But that's it's that ingrained, and yet all of a sudden it's disappeared. I thought this was the major issue. Rachel Maddow was telling me she had to talk about this for 45 minutes every single night. It was so important. And Russia's stealing our elections, and Russia is, you know, Trump is a Russian puppet, and now all of a sudden Russia or Trump is pulling out of the nuclear weapons deal that we have with Russia, and they're threatening a new Cold War arms race. So that doesn't, and yet we don't hear about that because it doesn't fall into the narrative. So I'm wondering, What do you think is going to happen with Russia? Was Russiagate are we going to ignore that now? Are we going to pretend it never happened? Is it going to come back? Or where do we go with Russiagate from here?
Yeah, one Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting article showed that Rachel Maddow had spent 55% of all her broadcasts talking on Russia or Russia-related issues. So, you know, I think the new term for McCarthyism should be mad dog disease. It's pretty terrible. And you know
that's good. That's good. That's good stuff.
Thank you. It's pretty terrible. And I never thought I'd see a return of McCarthyism, but here we are again. You know, we point to McCarthyism as, wow, what a sad, sick time in America's past. And we'll never do that again. And then here it is back up front. And I think the reason, you know, you're pointing to the fact that that it's decreasing, the coverage is decreasing of the Russiagate stuff. It's because there's been a leak, DC, you know, internal DC talk that the Mueller indictments, when they come down, surprise, surprise, are not going to show much. You know, I don't know what they're going to say, but let's see. The first ones he put out were 13 Russians at a clickbait farm. Some of them hadn't worked there since 2 years before the election. So if that's, you know, what he's going to put out, then I can see why the Democrats want to tamp this down, because they have walked out on a limb to act like Russia is, deciding all of our lives and is this boogeyman under the desk. And it's just WMD all over again. We need no evidence. We need no proof. We're just going to yell Russia every time anyone asks a tough question. And we saw all of that come back to bite progressives that had been excited about it for a while. Like now, and people say, oh, you voted for Bernie. You were a Russian. You're a Russian agent. If you voted for Jill Stein, you're a Russian agent. And it's like, you didn't think that would come back to bite you, these accusations that have absolutely no evidence behind them? It's totally outrageous. Not even to get into the fact that there were multiple international entities that influenced the election. One of them, the British one, Cambridge Analytica, did go out of business, but the mainstream media didn't want to talk about that for a year after the election. I covered it within weeks of Trump's election. Another one is Israel was very important. They were meeting with the Trump campaign early on, and Trump campaign had sought Israeli help in social media stuff. But
Saudi Arabia, it turns out they can butcher anybody they want. And, it's just no big deal.
Saudi Arabia is another one. Yeah. But that doesn't count, because that doesn't fit this paradigm we've been sold. And so I think that's why you're seeing the tamping down of the Russia stuff, because these indictments are going to come out eventually, I guess. And I honestly don't know what they could possibly show. There's a million things to, you know, indict Trump on, or, you know, maybe even impeach him on, but it's all his corrupt business dealings. Yeah. It's not hacking the DNC.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing, I mean, that my observation of Trump is that like when he says there was no collusion, he gets real animated about it and really like, he's like, yeah, I'm lying about all the other stuff, but this is true. I really didn't collude with Russia. Plus, right, he didn't want to win anyway, so why would he collude? But the question is, this is the way I feel like the left, or liberals and Republicans, or the right, are so similar, is that the whole Russiagate thing, it might just die off, and then we'll just act as if it never happened. Rachel Maddow is not going to be held to account for all that breathless coverage. And they were going to hack the elections. They were going to steal the midterm elections. Turns out they didn't. And so now we'll just be like, oh, well, what are you going to do? I feel like it's like, but with the Republicans, they're told, oh, gay marriage passes, it's going to destroy America. Or if we're going to allow gays in the military, remember how gays in the military was going to destroy our fighting? You know, they're not going to be combat ready because they're going to be afraid of, you don't want to be in a foxhole or something like that. And now we never hear about it. It's like, oh, well, but nobody's taken account for it. Nobody said, oh, you said that America was going to be destroyed if I have to bake a cake for a gay couple. Now I have to, and lo and behold, it's not. So I appreciate your voice as someone who will hold those people to account, even if you will not get any praise for it. You'll become the Scott Ritter or the Hans Blix of this generation, people who got it right about the WMDs, and so we never want to hear from you ever again.
The Hans Blix, absolutely. But just one last point I wanted to make is you know, the reason that the Democrats, or really the power elite in general, can't really say, hey, the election machines could be hacked, and they don't really want to harp on that, because guess what? What's the answer to that? Open source, fully accountable software, at the least. I mean, paper ballots is another thing, but open source, like, we should see the source code for every one of these machines. Instead, it is corporate-owned proprietary software. So honestly, they are scared to really push the idea that, hey, we got to know what's going on with these machines, because the answer is so obvious. Open source, publicly accountable, verifiable software, and they are not doing that. That will never see that day.
And I will add that it's it would be a little hypocritical for the Democratic Party to be critical of voter purges and hacking elections and stealing elections when they do it themselves, or at least they try to. All right, we're way over time. Lee, thank you so much for talking to me. I think we're gonna have you back next week to talk again and talk more about your role in the news media, which apparently you didn't know you had, but you do. And so, but I really appreciate your talking to me today. This has been super interesting. I love talking to you. I love people who can offer a left criticism of the media and politics, but still have a sense of humor about it, because otherwise, I think people tune out and they just get depressed. So I really do appreciate your perspective, and not just because I share it. It's ridiculous. So Lee Camp, thanks so much for talking to me today. I'll see you again next week. And for you at home, thanks so much for watching Reporting In. This is a show that we dedicate for members to see it first before the general public. And we appreciate your support and your membership. It keeps this show and the whole network going. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next time on Reporting In.